Thank you, and good morning. I'd like to start off by acknowledging my collaborators. There are quite a few of them there, so in the interest of time, I won't read out their names. A little bit of background. Fertilizer costs can be quite high, and they can be quite unpredictable. And because of that, there's been some interest in alternative sources of nitrogen. And we know for a long, long time that legume crops have the potential to reduce the requirement for inorganic nitrogen in subsequent crops. And most of the research has been conducted with cereals. There hasn't been a lot of research conducted with canola, especially hybrid canola. And there have been several publications over the years that have shown that hybrid canola is a very, very strong consumer of nitrogen. I'm going to talk a little bit about barley as well. I know this is a canola symposium, but in the interest of diversity and some other reasons, I thought I'd talk a bit about it. And malting barley is also a bit close to my heart. I get to go to conferences to test the end product. But after the great reception on Monday night, I think I might do a bit more research on canola in the future. Most of the cultivars grown in Western Canada are actually malting varieties, but very few of what is produced is accepted for malting grade, mainly because of poor quality and a lot of the time because of excess protein. So some growers are a bit reluctant to grow barley in rotation with legumes for this reason. So our objective was to determine the effect of different rotational crops, including several legumes, which we established in 2009 on yield and oil concentration of hybrid canola, which we grew in 2010, and yield and protein concentration of malting barley, which we grew in 2011. Some of you who've been in on some of the other Canadian speakers' talks have seen this schematic drawing of the Western Canadian provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. And you can see there are several distinct soil zones. The one up in northwestern Alberta here is a grey lubisol soil zone, very acidic compared to some of the others. Forests have been knocked down and arable land created. It's mainly in Alberta, but there's also a bit cuts into British Columbia here to the west. Very good region, growing region called the Rolla region. There's a very good pub there called the Rolla Pub. If you're ever driving around up there and get lost, go in there, have a pint, and they'll tell you how to get home. To the south, we have the brown soil zone, which the area my colleague Bob Blackshaw, who's speaking next, comes from. Not too many good pubs down there, but some good arable land. Tends to be more alkaline, traditionally drier, although that's not been the case in recent years. And in the center, we got the black soil zone, which is the most productive, up to 8 to 10% organic matter. Just a little bit about the crop sequence. In 2009, we grew field pea, lentil, fava bean, canola, and wheat, which we harvested for seed. And we also decided to stick in a green manure, and we use fava bean. It's been increasing as a crop in Western Canada recently. And these crops provided the residues for the treatments that we established in 2010 and 2011. We didn't apply hardly any nitrogen to the legumes, wheat and canola. We applied the fertilizer according to the side test recommendation. In 2010, we seeded hybrid canola across the whole experimental area. In 2011, malting barley. And we applied nitrogen at 5 rates, going from 0 to 120 kilograms per hectare. The experiment was basically a split plot with 4 replicates. We had the 6 crop residues that we established in 2009. These were the main plots, and the 5 inorganic nitrogen rates were assigned to the subplots. We analyzed the data using prop mixed of SAS. And for the purpose of this presentation, I'm going to consider the crop residues and the N rates as fixed effects, and the locations and the reps as random. This essentially means averaging the data over all of the sites. It can be quite powerful in terms of increasing the number of replicates. And we felt justified because the amount of variance that we attributed to the environment-treatment interaction was pretty low for the variables that I'm going to talk about, less than about 10%, indicating that the results were pretty consistent across the different areas. This shows the results of the analysis of variance. We can see highly significant effects of crop residues or preceding crops on all of the variables that I'm going to talk about: yields, oil and canola, and yield and protein and barley. And nitrogen also had a very significant effect. As expected, you'll see increases in yield with the increases in nitrogen. But interestingly, we did not see a significant interaction between the crop residues and the nitrogen rates. This is a little bit surprising in a sense, because it does indicate that maybe the beneficial effects of the legumes that I'm going to talk about may not have been totally as a result of nitrogen, of increasing the availability of nitrogen to the crop. If that was the case, we would have expected to see better effects of the legumes or higher effects of the legumes at the lower nitrogen rates. We didn't see that, and you'll see that in the graphs. Because we didn't see the interaction, I'm going to talk about the crop residues for a bit, their effects on yield and oil in canola averaged over the 5 nitrogen rates. And I'm going to compare it to wheat residue in 2009. And you can clearly see a huge increase in yield of canola, 27%, where we had fava bean as a green manure. We also saw a 10% increase where we took the field pea for seed and the lentil for seed. Funny enough, though, when we took the fava bean for seed, we did not see a benefit to the canola crop. Also of interest there, if you look at where we had canola in 2009 and grew canola again in 2010, we saw a significant 8% reduction in yields of canola the second year. And this was a bit of a surprise, because we didn't see any incidence of disease at any of the sites. And we don't know really why, at this point, why we saw, after 2 years of canola, a reduction in yield. And it's important, because you might have heard some of the other Canadian speakers talk over the last couple of days about some of the rotations, especially up in that Peace River region in northwestern Alberta: canola snow, canola snow. The response to nitrogen, pretty well as expected. I think if we were doing the experiment again, we would have used a higher rate of nitrogen, maybe up to 150 kilograms per hectare. But a gradual increase, maybe a bit of a leveling off at the higher rates after 90 kilograms per hectare. If we focus in on taking the pea and the lentil for seed, and we look at 90 kilograms per hectare in nitrogen, you can see that where we had lentil residue and pea residue, the yields are the same as where we had 120 kilograms per hectare and wheat residue in 2009. So essentially what that's telling us, there is room. If a legume was grown like pea or lentil for seed in 2009, room to reduce nitrogen rate by about 25% to attain pretty well the same yield. You can also clearly see the parallel effects there, the same effect basically at each nitrogen rate, which was a little bit surprising. And the green manure is way up there, but we did an economic analysis, and it's just published recently in the Agronomy Journal. I'm not going to go into it, but the fava bean green manure was not economical because of the loss of a crop during that particular year. What effect did the residues have on oil? I actually should have talked a bit about that in the last slide, but very little effect. Fava bean green manure maybe having the greatest effect of the residues on the oil concentration. It's much more likely that increasing the nitrogen rate will reduce the oil concentration significantly because of the inverse relationship between oil and protein. But very little effect of the legumes, especially when we took pea and lentil for seed. Jump ahead to barley in 2011, basically the same type of response. We saw the highest yield increase with the fava bean green manure, not as great as we saw with canola, about 14%. No effect again when we took the fava bean for seed, and about a 6 to 70% when we grew the field pea and the lentil for seed. If we look at the protein, the barley protein, very little effect really of the crop residues. A slight increase where we had fava beans as green manure, where we had lentil, but still we're looking at about 11.7, 11.6%, which is in the acceptable range for protein content of malting barley. And again, if we look at the response to nitrogen, you know, more or less similar to what we saw with canola. And again, if we look at 90 kilograms per hectare, where we had lentils and peas in 2009, yield pretty well identical to where we had wheat residue and where we had 120 kilograms per hectare. So again, and the year after canola, where we had barley, potential to reduce nitrogen application by about 25%. And you can see the response to nitrogen in terms of barley protein. As expected, the nitrogen is much more likely to drive the barley protein to unacceptable levels than growing the legumes in 2009. So in conclusion, compared to wheat, all of the legume crops, except fava bean where we took for seed, produce higher canola and barley yields. Green manure produced the highest yield, but again, that was not actually economical. By the way, in terms of net returns, the net returns were actually higher where we had either pea or lentil in 2009 compared to wheat. So that was economical to grow these and cut back on the nitrogen. We saw a 10% increase in the hybrid canola yield in 2010, about a 6 to 7% increase in barley yield when we grew field pea or lentil as the preceding crops. And this resulted in both years in about a 25% possibility of the possibility of reducing nitrogen rate by about 25%. The big surprise in this whole thing really was the reduction in canola yield when we grew canola just 2 years in a row. And close to 10% might seem a lot, but when you consider canola prices relative to some of the other prices, most farmers would not consider this a big deal. Of greater importance, of course, is when you tighten the rotation, you run into all sorts of problems down the road with diseases, with insects, and with weeds. And finally, we didn't see a major effect of the legume crops on oil concentration of canola or on protein concentration of barley. So I will leave it at that, and I want to acknowledge the funders. There are quite a few of them, including Canola Council Canada and so on, and the excellent technical support that we had at the different locations. Thank you.
Thank you, John. We have time for a couple questions, if there are any.
Actually, that's probably a good question, and I should have mentioned this, that one of the things that might preclude growing a legume crop in rotation with canola, close to canola, is Sclerotinia. Though we didn't have any outbreaks of Sclerotinia at any of the sites, but it is a risk.
Growing. Did you routinely treat your canola with a fungicide?
No, we didn't.
Another
one? Yes. I want to make a comment on that. From our crop insurance records, we have analyzed the effect of rotation, which in your sites you have 8% loss of canola on canola, which I think is under really good management. Mm-hmm. That's maybe reasonable. But on average, we, from farm data, we experience about a 15 to 20% loss of canola yield when it's planted on canola. So I think which reflects a little bit more of the impact of disease.
One more, if there is.
John, if you were to chase up this canola and canola yield loss, you didn't see disease, what would you go and measure? Like, what would you go and look at?
You know, one of the things I thought about was, is this a nutrient thing? Like, did you get a big draw on the nutrients in 2009, and did this affect the canola? But I don't think that's the case. I don't know if Bob wants to comment on that. Maybe mycorrhiza was a factor. You know, that has been brought
it's my
out.
Next presentation.
Sorry?
It's my presentation.
Okay, Bob.
We wait for Bob. Very good, yeah.
Maybe the data, would moisture be a problem?
Actually, actually, we check moisture. That's a very good point. We took moisture to very low levels to see if the legumes were actually, if there was more moisture for these crops after legumes relative to wheat and canola. We couldn't see any differences at all. Bit of a mystery, but Bob might solve it.
Thank you very much, John.
You're welcome.
All right.